Welcome to episode 89 of Talk Eastern Europe, a podcast dedicated to Central and Eastern Europe and the official podcast of the New Eastern Europe magazine. My name is Adam Reichert, and with me is the other co-host, Maciek Makulski. Hi, Maciek.
Hi, Adam. Hello, listeners. Welcome to Talk Eastern Europe. Each week, we bring you a discussion on topics related to our region. In this episode, we are looking at the results of the last December's Eastern Partnership Summit. And as a reminder, this podcast is listener-supported, so if you like what we do, please consider becoming a member via our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/talkeasterneurope. And don't forget to listen to the end of this episode for our traditional Patreon shout-out.
And Talk Eastern Europe is a member of the Europod Network, a network of European podcasts covering a range of social and political issues.
Welcome back to the program. Since we are recording this introduction on Monday, I think, Adam, I can start with a question. How was your weekend?
Well, hello, everybody. And yes, welcome back. Weekend was quite busy, actually. I managed to try to catch up with a lot of work that I hadn't done for the week before, including we are just finishing the next issue of New Eastern Europe, finally getting it ready for print. So do stay tuned. For that, we have a lot of really good articles on the situation in the region, particularly looking at, of course, the security situation with Ukraine and what might happen next there. How was your weekend, Maciek?
Well, mine was quite good, I would say, but I didn't work too much. In contrast to you, Adam.
You're lucky.
Yeah, but I spent very nice time with my family. So yeah, this is how my weekend looked like. And yeah, since I think we can start talking about, you know, the main topic of the episode, and our main focus is today Eastern Partnership. But before I think we delve into that, I just want to also ask you whether you had a chance to read this joint statement by Presidents Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping that was released just a couple of days ago, I think on February 4th. It's quite interesting reading.
I haven't read the whole statement, to be honest. I've only read the news about it and the headlines. It was interesting to see that there was some trying to build some alliance, I guess. We know that for a long time we've been talking about this, even at the podcast here and in New Eastern Europe, about the relationship between Russia and China, which is a very asymmetrical one. So I'm curious, Maciek, maybe you have some reflections on this declaration and what it might mean for security in our region.
Well, first of all, the word alliance is not there, so they are rather very careful in using specific terms, since the term alliance means something concrete in the field of international relations, in diplomacy. So you cannot find the term alliance there. But I can quote two or three very short excerpts from the document if you like. I think it might be also interesting to our listeners, because I found particularly interesting this excerpt from the document. The sides reaffirm their strong mutual support for the protection of their core interests, state sovereignty and territorial integrity, and oppose interference by external forces in their internal affairs. The Russian side reaffirms its support for the One China principle, confirms that Taiwan is an inalienable part, and opposes any forms of independence of Taiwan. Russia and China stand against attempts by external forces to undermine security and stability in their common adjacent regions, intend to counter interference by outside forces in the internal affairs of sovereign countries under any pretext, oppose color revolutions, and will increase cooperation in the aforementioned areas. End quote.
Wow. Yeah, it's interesting, the mention of, you know, territorial integrity and sovereignty, I guess, is interpreted different depending on what part of the world they're talking about. Yeah.
And one more, if you allow me.
Okay, yeah.
The sides oppose further enlargement of NATO and call on the North Atlantic Alliance to abandon its ideologized Cold War approaches to respect the sovereignty, security, and interests of other countries, the diversity of their civilizational, cultural, and historical backgrounds, and to exercise a fair and objective attitude towards the peaceful development of other states.
So interesting, yeah. Reality that this this document reflects. Maybe it's an idea for a future podcast to talk about the Russian Chinese relationship in the framework or the context of the conflict in Ukraine and also, you know, NATO Russia relations, because I mean I always had an impression that obviously China doesn't have a good, you know, doesn't want the U.S. particularly, but the West in general to be ruling in the world. You know, they also want to have their share of influence and their spheres. But I think at the same time, the world order that as it is in the moment is economically good for China. And so I'm interested to see how much China actually believes in these words versus is it just kind of providing some support to Vladimir Putin, and also maybe some reaction to the more anti-Chinese elements in Western countries, like, you know, the U.S. Obviously, their policies are pretty tough on China, but also Lithuania and some other European states.
Yeah, I think you raised very important aspects of the whole situation, and definitely, I would like to ask these kind of questions to an expert on Russian-Chinese relations. I think we can think about this kind of episode to publish soon. But, you know, there is something in the long term. I think there might be a lot of issues between Russia and China. And on the other hand, if they talk about, you know, reshaping the world order and, you know, limiting the role of the United States, global role of the United States, they probably go hand in hand together. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And they have a lot of common ground there. The last very short excerpt from the document, okay, which I think is also very interesting. The Chinese side is sympathetic to and supports the proposals put forward by the Russian Federation to create long-term, legally binding security guarantees in Europe, end quote. I think this excerpt clearly refers to the idea drafted by Russia, yeah, in the so-called agreement, official documents released several weeks ago.
Yeah, this is very interesting. This is very interesting that basically, it does reaffirm this idea that China supports Russia's desire to have a sphere of influence, more or less. Yeah.
Yeah, I think obviously I'm not an expert on Chinese foreign policy, but I think I don't remember such clear and loud way of, yeah, support.
True.
Of Russia by China, at least in recent years. But that would be also an interesting question to an expert in this field.
Well, and let's pose this question now to our listeners as well. Let's get your opinion and your feedback on what you think about this new Chinese-Russian, we won't use the word alliance, but let's say agreement on world affairs and the world order. So send us your comments. Most of you know where we are. If not, listen to the end of the podcast. We usually announce where you can find us.
Now let's get back to the main theme of this episode,
yes,
which is again the Eastern Partnership Summit that was held in December 2021. And perhaps some of our listeners remember that we recorded an episode before the summit in which we discussed some expectations before the summit, seen from the perspective of a civil society organizations. So in this episode, we would like also to check if at least some of the summit outcomes met those expectations. And I think, Adam, we don't have to bring too much context since the interview we did together is very informative and I think a good one and provides a good overview of what was achieved and what was not achieved during the summit. But I think I would like to underline two things. The first is Belarus and the fact that Belarusian authorities did not take part in the summit. And what is more, they decided they are no longer interested as such in the initiative.
Yeah, yeah.
And the second, and of course, this situation now poses a challenge how to maintain the cooperation between, Europe and the Belarusian civil society. And the second thing is the association trio composed of Moldova, Ukraine, and Georgia, and which was mentioned in the post-summit declaration. And I think these two facts confirm that we have a sort of a multi-split Eastern partnership. And I think this is a scenario which was anticipated by the expert community for already quite time.
Yeah.
But I think that was worth mentioning at the beginning of this episode.
This idea of the associated trio is, in my opinion, it's quite interesting that they have decided to try to combine their efforts, even though they're in very different positions, these three countries, Georgia, Moldova, Ukraine. But it does give me some reminders of Visegrad cooperation, for example, in the 1990s, or the Balkans, or the Western Balkans have a good cooperation format, and that we can look at. The Berlin process, for example, is another way, another example here. So I think the associated trio is kind of going along these ways, and it will be interesting to see how it develops.
Yeah, and as it was the case in our previous episode in the Eastern Partnership, this episode we also produce in a cooperation between Togistan Europe and the Eastern Partnership Civil Society Forum. And a few words about this organization. We are very grateful for this cooperation, but for those who are not aware, Civil Society Forum is the largest umbrella organization of the non-governmental organization from the Eastern Partnership region and the European Union, working together with over 1,000 organizations to promote European integration, facilitate reforms, democratic transformation in all Eastern Partnership countries. And I think it might be called as the civil society and people-to-people dimension of the Eastern Partnership.
Yes, yes, it's quite a large forum and a very important one as well. So, Maciek, maybe I'll briefly introduce the guest, and we will move then to our interview.
Sure.
So we sat down with Mikhail Hovhannisyan, who is the program director of the Eurasia Partnership Foundation, based in Yerevan, Armenia. And he is also a steering committee of the Eastern Partnership Civil Society Forum, which Maciek just described, an important organization that is also part of the multilateral cooperation of the Eastern Partnership.
Welcome back to the program. Hello, Mikhail. It's nice to have you here at Togistan Europe.
Hello. Thank you very much for the invitation and for the opportunity.
When I was reading the post-summit comments, I got the impression that it is perceived as a relative success. And some people say that the fact that the summit took place, it was already a success. So as an initial question, I would like to ask you if you share this enthusiasm, and also what is your general assessment of the summit's conclusions?
Well, obviously, in order to properly assess the results of the summit and the effectiveness of the summit, I think we need to first pay attention to the overall context of when the summit was taking place. And the context is quite a complicated one, I think, multi-component and problematic. First, we need to take into account that the life of Eastern Partnership is already quite long, so it exists for more than a decade. It had obviously its ups and downs, both globally and in case of separate Eastern Partner countries. So it is already a long way that the initiative has went through. But the particular context for this summit consists of several very, very important components. Well, obviously, the one component that covers all countries, including the EU, is the COVID, which has made the communication and cooperation much more problematic, the interactions way more less interactive, if we can put it in this way. This logically has affected the pace of the initiative and the pace of communication. So COVID is one part of the context. The other part of the context relates to situation in Belarus and the internal processes going on in Belarus, which basically resulted in the announcement by Lukashenko about suspension of Belarus's participation in Eastern Partnership, which is another very problematic issue. So it violates the integrity of the Eastern Partnership to some extent and creates additional problems for the initiative to develop. Another part of the concept is obviously the 44-day Nagorno-Karabakh and the escalation and drastic escalation of the Armenian-Azerbaijani conflict and the actions that followed this war, because it still has strong, it's still echoing in not only in Armenia and Azerbaijan and in Nagorno-Karabakh, but also in the entire region. And finally, and obviously, also the situation around Ukraine is adding its part to the overall context, which is, I think, again, very, very problematic. Under these circumstances, logically, many can perceive the fact of happening of the summit as a success. But if trying to assess whether it was a success or was not a success, I think we need to approach not only globally, but also individually. In case of every separate country, it can be perceived as a positive or less positive or negative happening. So I think in terms of the set of countries for whom it can be more or less positively assessed, I would say that Georgia, Moldova, and Belarus are among the ones, and to some extent Armenia. For Azerbaijan and Belarus, it is a lesser success, in my opinion. But I think throughout our conversation, we'll come to the details in case of each country more specifically. But in terms of the general assessment, I think that it is clearly visible from the declaration. It sets, again, quite an ambitious agenda for future. And basically, it provides with lots of opportunities for development. Will or will not these opportunities be used depends on the parties engaged. So this is the key, I think, factor that needs to be taken into.
Yeah, I wanted to follow up with that. I mean, I think we will be, the whole discussion will be following up with how you introduced it, because I think it was a very good overview of how you walked away from, or, you know, understanding what was achieved at the summit. So one area that I'm really interested in, and I think, you know, in my personal opinion, a very interesting development in the Eastern Partnership over the last year or so has been this associated trio. You mentioned that for, you know, Georgia, Moldova, and Ukraine, the summit was probably much more positive than the other three members. I'm curious on your opinion of how, especially since you're coming from a country which is not a member of this associated trio, coming from Armenia, how do you see it? How do you see this development from your perspective? And what do you think this associated trio means for the future of the Eastern Partnership?
That's a really good question, because it's a question that has been also discussed within the civil society forum itself. Mm-hmm. And again, here we need to take into account several very important aspects and factors. What was important in the, again, and it was explicitly formulated in the declaration, what was important particularly for the trio is the mention of the European aspirations. Respect towards the European aspirations of the three particular countries. This is something that is extremely important for pro-European significant part of these three countries, the societies and the authorities as well.
Yes.
I think this is extremely, extremely important. Secondly, I think that, again, even in case of evaluating these three countries, we need to take into account that despite the fact that they have the similar cooperation framework, which is the association agreement and the CFTA, the Deepened Comprehensive Free Trade Agreement with the European Union, they also differ from each other in terms of enormous number of factors. Particularly what I think needs to be mentioned, the sustainability of reforms. We can compare the three with each other. And actually, one of the products of the Eastern Partnership Civil Society Forum, which is the index,
yes,
illustrates how this process was happening throughout the years in case of each separate country. Mm-hmm. So there is a difference in terms of stability of reforms, sustainability of reforms. There is obviously the influence of the Russian factor in case of one country, it's more, in case of another, it's different, et cetera, et cetera. So there is another important, so this is another important thing that needs to be taken into account. For an Armenian assessing all this process, I think what is important is that the trio contains significant constructive potential to keep the integrity of the Eastern Partnership. It might sound controversial what I'm saying, but I'll try to explain why I think so. Mm-hmm. My point is that if the trio initiates cooperative processes within the Eastern Partnership, between the three, it will significantly enrich the multilateral aspect of the Eastern Partnership as an initiative, which is extremely important, again, for the integrity of the initiative, and which will create other three in different configurations to, if not to be directly engaged, but to take something on board from this cooperation configurations. So I think one very important role here is this constructive potential for multilateral cooperation. And in this respect, for Armenia, which is, in my opinion, extremely interested in success of the Eastern Partnership, because here in Armenia, we do not perceive, many of us, we do not perceive Eastern Partnership as a some kind of a post-Soviet buffer zone, but as an initiative which has an interesting sub-regional potential. And the level of development of the Eastern Partnership, in my opinion, is very, very much important for Armenia in terms of its, you know, vision for development and in terms of its multipolar foreign policy and its need to have complementary foreign policy. Mm-hmm.
Don't you think that the EU is not showing too much of enthusiasm towards this association trio? In this joint declaration, it is stated that the EU acknowledges the fact that there is association trio, but you know, there is a kind of a distance, or kind of a how to put it correctly, that the EU is really not very enthusiastic about this. I want to ask about this EU perspective towards the association trio, because on the other hand, having in mind all those positive aspects of association trio you have explained, it can be also perceived by the EU as a bit problematic issue, because it somehow divides the Eastern Partnership countries into two groups, like more advanced and less advanced, and it might cause further splits. I'm curious if you have any thoughts about that.
Yeah, actually, that, again, very, very important question. And again, something that has been discussed for years. And this is an ongoing discussion. First, there is obviously this opposing processes of differentiation and multilateral approach. But it might seem opposing only in a short-term perspective. I think if we try to perceive it in a longer-term perspective, they are not opposing to each other, but they're contributing to each other. So in case of a proper digitalization or the proper understanding of this potential for contribution, I think that in a long-term perspective, there is no conflict between differentiation and multilateral approach. In terms of EU's lack of enthusiasm, well, in my introduction, I gave the entire problematic context of current of the last summit. So obviously, under these circumstances and in these conditions, there is very little room for enthusiasm. But plus, enthusiasm is something that can reduce or increase. So and we have experienced that throughout the entire history of the Eastern Partnership. And again, I think that this process requires way more patience than it might seem from the first sight. And in that sense, I think if we try to perceive the longer lasting history of the Eastern Partnership, and if we try to set up some visions for a longer perspective, longer term perspective, there are quite a lot of opportunities for enthusiasm. So we can enrich ourselves in that terms. And also, what is happening right now is a transition which different parts of the world have faced throughout the entire history of humanity. And these transformations that are taking place in this region are extremely complicated. They have lots of rooms for success, lots of rooms for failure. And in case it's a row of failures, you are becoming less enthusiastic. And in case there is a row of success, you become more enthusiastic. So yeah, I think I don't know to what extent I could answer your question, but these are my thoughts on this issue.
You mentioned in the beginning about these problematic issues that are like shadowing the Eastern Partnership, particularly the summit last December. We didn't even have the Russian buildup around Ukraine, so we put that aside for a moment. But I'm curious, you mentioned the Nagorno-Karabakh war, the second war that broke out between Azerbaijan and Armenia. How do you assess at all? Was there any role that was played by Eastern Partnership in this, or was it really on the sideline during the outbreak of hostilities?
Well, the role of the Eastern Partnership and the role of the EU in this process, I think I would assess it more positive than negative. Mm-hmm. I mean, because there were attempts to decrease the escalation. There were constant attempts to, have some mediation, have some role in decreasing the tension. Unfortunately, they were not successful enough. But in my opinion, Eastern Partnership whatsoever can still play a role as an environment for communication. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. At this point, I'm talking only about communication. There was a question on that, so we'll come to this a bit later.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is a room for it's an environment for communication, and it's a resource that can be used and that needs to be used if we want to achieve security and peace in the region.
And in fact, there was on the sidelines of the Eastern Partnership Summit, there were moderated discussions between.
Yes.
Do you think that was helpful for the EU to get involved at that point?
Yes, I think that at this point in time, these kind of moderated discussions are very important. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because after this, the very dramatic events and this drastic developments, the very fact of communication becomes important. Multiplicity of platforms and formats for this communication is important. Mm-hmm. Because it opens different windows of opportunities to reach agreements on some very, very important aspects. For example, on the issue of prisoners of war, which is currently perhaps one of the most important topics on the agenda.
Yeah.
And which still is a problem because there are lots of prisoners of war kept in Azerbaijan. Mm-hmm. So, that's very, very, very important. And the more attempts to create additional opportunities for communication with a more or less constructive and clear agenda, yeah, the better it is. Mm.
I want to now refer to another problematic issue you mentioned at the beginning, which is the case of Belarus. And we know that Belarusian authorities suspend their participation in the Eastern Partnership, but in the same time, in the joint declaration, it is stated that the EU continues engagement with and support for the Belarus citizens, civil society, and independent media. And I would like to ask, do you think it is possible under current circumstances to really maintain this engagement, and how it can be achieved also in a way which would not pose any threat for the civil society organization in Belarus?
Oh, well, this is probably one of the hardest questions you have asked, because it has lots of factors that are influencing this process, and the situation in Belarus is extremely complicated, and the situation around Belarus is extremely complicated. The fact that despite this unilateral decision of Lukashenko to withdraw himself basically from this partnership, and the reaction of the EU, how we can perceive this, just as a suggestion, it's that it is not Belarus that is out of the Eastern Partnership. It is Lukashenko's authorities that are out of the Eastern Partnership, which means that EU expresses its support towards all the democratic efforts and democratic struggle of the society in Belarus. So here, if we talk about the factors that influence this process, of course, primarily it depends on the people of Belarus, on the readiness of the opposition and the society of Belarus to continue consolidated efforts. And I believe that there is such potential, and there is such strength inside the country. But it also needs, you know, efforts around the process. And I think that what EU does, and again, the statements that were made during and around the summit are illustrating the readiness of the EU to support this process. We also need to take into account that, again, the Belarus-Russia agenda strongly conditions the potential of the development. The situation, again, around Ukraine strongly conditions the potential developments in Belarus, etc., etc. So one of the major problems that we can observe here is extreme uncertainty in terms of what the possible developments can be. And in these conditions, the only constructive behavior, in my opinion, should be the readiness to rapidly respond to the needs of partners, effectively, constructively respond to the needs of partners, because you cannot build a clear strategy in these conditions of uncertainty. You need to have plan A, plan B, plan C, but in today's world, the level of uncertainty is to the extent that you cannot have all possible letters of plans, which means that you need to have mechanisms of rapid response. Mm. This is, I think, the most important thing here. But still, what is the key aspect, the key issue here is the readiness, the potential, and the resource within Belarus and the society and the opposition of Belarus. And their readiness for this consolidated effort.
So I would like to move now to discussion related to the role of civil society in Eastern Partnership. As a member of the steering committee of the Eastern Partnership Civil Society Forum, I'm curious on how the summit conclusions, if they have met the expectations of civil society organizations. Do you think that going forward that the Eastern Partnership is able to create even deeper cooperation between the societies of the members of the Eastern Partnership?
Well, as I mentioned in the beginning, the summit and the results of summit are, for me, they are positive because they have formed enormous room for opportunities, mm-hmm. and it has enormous potential for cooperation. What is important is the extent to which the parties are ready to use these opportunities to cooperate, to communicate, and to address. The role of the civil society here is huge, in my opinion, because first, one of the most important things that the civil society possesses in the Eastern Partnership framework is the multilateral format that is working. Mm-hmm. By multilateral format that is working, I mean, first and foremost, the civil society forum. Mm-hmm. It, in fact, is probably the most effective multilateral format of the Eastern Partnership so far, which means that it can, or at least it has the potential of generating ideas, projects, and precedents of multilateral cooperation, and this exercising this potential of becoming a sub-region, which the official frameworks might not even have. So here, the role of the civil society, one of the most important roles of the civil society is. Another issue is obviously the fact that civil society is a position that provides the alternative view on the processes. Mm-hmm. It can serve as a source of alternative information. It can serve as an entry point for particular interventions into reform processes, for example. It is way more flexible, which gives civil society an opportunity for, exercising various tools, methods, mechanisms, and then introducing the success or failure of it. So that in case of success, it can be taken on board in a larger scale format. So all of this is something that this partnership civil society forum contains as a potential and can positively exercise. Hmm. But another thing that we need to take into account is that the civil society is not a monolith entity.
Yeah.
It has very, very different faces, different types, different levels of development, and different perceptions of values. And what is important here, particularly in case of the civil society, is the commitment to the values proclaimed. Mm-hmm. So having the respect for human rights, the understanding of necessity of democratic transformations, the equality, the common understanding of issues related to security, etc.
Right.
This is something that the commitment towards which needs to be explicitly addressed and declared. And this is to some extent, these values need to serve as a filter for the organizations that are engaged in the process, because those who are not committed to these values cannot be effectively engaged in any process positive process.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the issue. But again, I tried to give you a more or less general picture, but it has also particular cases that we can examine and understand how and what works. Because throughout this past decade, there have been lots of cooperation cases between different organizations working in different countries, not only from the Eastern Partnership, but also from the EU, which have formed lots of very, very interesting configurations and have developed lots of very interesting products and have registered lots of very, very important outcomes. So this also needs to be thoroughly, reviewed, reflected, and lessons need to be learned from all this experience. Mm. I think we are now in a stage where this reflection needs to be conducted.
Before the summit in December last year, we recorded an episode with the representatives of the Eastern Partnership Civil Society Forum. We had a very nice discussion with three of your colleagues, and we were discussing what are the expectations before the summit. And I remember that one of that such expectation was that Eastern Partnership should include some mechanisms or simply way of thinking that would allow deeper engagement of the youth. And what's more, this engagement should be not just a temporal project or something like that. It should be rather a cross-sectoral issue existing within this, Eastern Partnership architecture, if I may put it that way. So I want to ask you, whether do you see in these conclusions, in this general direction that the Eastern Partnership is going to take for the next couple of years, that this is going to happen, that we can see more youth engagement in future?
First of all, I completely agree with this position that I do not perceive personal youth as a sector. I perceive youth as a layer which interacts with all thematic areas and sectors that relate to all these activities. So here, of course, there is a strong importance in engaging youth more in these processes. And one thing that immediately came to my mind was the part from the declaration of the summit referring to the necessity of increasing the number of European ambassadors. This is one of the particular tools that EU is exercising in the Eastern Partnership to promote value-based engagement of the youth in this process. So this is one simple example from the summit declaration and from the actual plan that illustrates that there is, I think, understanding of this necessity, and there is a tendency of increasing the level of involvement of young people in this process. But again, what we need to take into account, I always give the positive part and then add some problematic aspect. I'm so sorry for that. But what we need to take into account is, again, how it is implemented in each and every particular case. How effective is it transformed into a particular project and implemented to resolve, to reach the goals set. So expectation, as an aspiration, it is formulated properly. What is left is to implement it properly as a particular set of projects, set of actions in each case and each particular country, and as a multilateral effect as well.
So maybe it sounds like there's a lot of work that needs to be done, a lot of work ahead of civil society and the societies in general, Eastern Partnership. So I'm just maybe allow you to add some closing remarks or some concluding remarks. What's ahead from your perspective for Eastern Partnership and particularly for civil societies in preparation of the next summit, let's say?
Well, again, we are currently in a very, very difficult situation.
Yes.
We're facing drastic transformations, and it's very hard to predict what will happen next, what disaster will appear tomorrow. And what we need to do, I think we need to remain committed to the guiding values and principles, and be consecutive in terms of our commitment to reforms. And the role of the civil society and the forum here is very important, particularly as, you know, this reflective eye, reflective position, and an important position for intervention in making the reform processes more sustainable, more effective, et cetera, et cetera. Because I'll give the example of Armenia. We are currently at the early stage of implementation of the SEPA agreement, which is, again, which can be compared with the association agreement because it sets enormous amount of possibilities for cooperation and for development. And for Armenia, in its process of democratic transformation, it is an important, resource. The SEPA agreement is an important resource for development. So if there is commitment to this process, if there is effective engagement of the civil society in implementation, in planning, in monitoring of this process, then there is an enormous room for development. And this relates not only to Armenia and SEPA, obviously, this relates to association agreements and even to more problematic aspects of Azerbaijan and even more problematic aspect of Belarus. Here, the support to civil society becomes crucial. So I think what we need to do to remain committed to the values and be also commitment to our work in terms of moving the reforms forward. Mm.
Mikhail, thank you for joining Talk Eastern Europe and sharing your very interesting thoughts on the Eastern Partnership.
Thank you very much once again for the invitation. I hope that I was useful to some extent.
It was very interesting.
Very interesting.
Yes. Thanks. Thank you so much. And that was our interview with Mikhail Hovhannisyan from the Eurasia Partnership Foundation. I thought it was quite an interesting discussion, very good to get his perspective, not only as a steering committee member of the Eastern Partnership Civil Society Forum, but also as someone who's coming from Armenia, which, as we discussed during the interview, is not a part of this associated trio. So he has a little bit of a different perspective, but he was quite positive and quite optimistic about the developments, about the summit, and about things going forward, despite the challenging context which he outlined in the beginning. And as we have to remember, the summit took place before this whole buildup of Russian forces around Ukraine. So you know, that's just an added part of this that we can add to the context of the challenges that our region faces. But it's good to hear that he was quite positive with the direction that the Eastern Partnership has been taking. I think a lot of people in the expert community and decision-making community sometimes can be quite critical of the Eastern Partnership for not delivering membership perspective in particular to some of the leading members. But I think at the same time, it's important to remember that there has been some really important transformations and a lot of positive developments in the region thanks to the Eastern Partnership. So, of course, a lot more can be done, but we should not forget about the positives.
Yes, and one of our aims in producing these episodes on Eastern Partnership is also to underline that Eastern Partnership is not only about intergovernmental talks, cooperation, and you know, high politics, but we really want to underline this very important nexus, which is cooperation between civil societies, between non-governmental organizations. And this is why we invited to produce those episodes together with the Eastern Partnership Civil Society Forum, which is, as I said in the introduction of this episode, very important organization which try to promote this and this dialogue, to develop this cooperation further. And I really invite you to visit their website, check what they do, read their papers. They provide a lot of useful information about Eastern Partnership countries.
And we will include links, of course, to the podcast episode with some suggestions on more information if you're interested on what has been done. Okay, Maciek, I think now we can move on to the final section of our podcast, which is always our favorite, the announcements, the thank yous, and things like that. I just wanted to start by saying that in the last episode, we announced that some changes are coming. We have a new person who will be joining us shortly, so stick around for that. We haven't made that official announcement yet because we're just waiting on a few things. But one other important announcement that I want to make for the first time here, only the patrons know it, is the fact that we just launched a new website for the podcast, which is at www.talkeasterneurope.eu. On that website, you can find all of the episodes, previous episodes. You can sign up to subscribe to get email alerts when there are new episodes. All the links to the different top portals which host Talk Eastern Europe are there, as well as information on the patrons and links to supporting us via Patreon page. So definitely, I recommend all of you to please check out the website. It's www.talkeasterneurope.eu, and we hope you join us there.
And one more change, which we already introduced, is that we want to publish every episode on the same day of the week.
Yes.
And we decided it will be Tuesday. So hopefully you are listening this episode on Tuesday.
Or after, yes.
Or after, but if yes, it means that we managed.
Yes, I think this episode will be the second one in a row that we managed. So let's try to keep up the pace. And of course, lastly, we have to say thank you to our patrons who are supporting us financially with their input. We are really grateful that we have a really engaged group of patrons with us. And there are some new things that are being developed there as well. And one of the main benefits that all of our patrons get at the moment is a shout out and thank you on the podcast. So I just want to take the moment and say hello and thank you to our patrons, including Anais, Georgia, Stephen, Tom, PM, Olaf, Ian, CB, Klaus, Plamen, Sean, Naomi, JP, Elise, Sean, David, Pavel, Urs, Ian, Sophia, Wilhelm, David, Erica, Janos, Jason, Mark, Stephanie, and Pierre. Thank you so much for your support. And do stay tuned. As we mentioned, new exclusive content is also being published just for our patrons. So if you like Talk Eastern Europe and you want more, we definitely recommend that you join us in our Patreon page. The link is also the first link that you'll find in the podcast description. to this episode.
Thank you very much for your support. We always say that this is so important to us because without this support, we could not develop this podcast. So again, thank you. Thank you very much.
Yes. Okay, Maciek, I think that's pretty much all we have today. We are preparing the next episodes already, so please stay tuned. As Maciek mentioned just a moment ago, the plan is to publish each episode on Tuesday, Tuesday afternoon Polish time. So if you're in North America or in the Western Hemisphere, I should say, it might be more in the morning, but Tuesdays are our days to publish. Thanks again for joining us, and until next time.
Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.